Did you know some travel credit cards offer 10x points on your spending? Don't miss out on big rewards for your next trip. NerdWallet lets you compare smart travel credit cards side by side, curated by an expert team of finance nerds. What could future you do with better travel rewards? A free flight? A room upgrade? Don't wait to make smart financial decisions.
Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. Reminder, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply. NerdWallet, finance smarter. In recent weeks, we've really focused on some ways that listeners can boost their income. So whether that's through starting your own side business and growing your network like Holla talked about, or when we talked with local realtor Alan about diving into investing in real estate, well, what better way to test the waters? While you are away, your home could also earn extra income.
That's right. Your empty space could be an Airbnb while you're traveling, because that's all you need to become an Airbnb host. It's a lot easier than you think, and you don't need to Airbnb your entire house. You could just host your extra spare room. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Supercharge your work decks with AI-powered Canva presentations. All you do is start with a prompt. You describe your presentation in a few words, and Canva presentations will generate captivating slides that you can then customize in seconds.
Canva presentations are designed for every workplace and every department. Whether you work in sales, marketing, HR, ops, and more, Canva presentations can generate any deck you want for work. Sales decks, marketing presentations, onboarding plans, you name it. Any department can save time on any presentation with AI.
Generate slides in seconds with Canva presentations at canva.com, designed for work. All right, so hopefully folks aren't tired of hearing my voice first, which means that we've got a bestie episode lined up for you. In this case, well, this will be the end of our little run here of some of your time down there in Florida, while my family and I, we figure some other stuff out to do.
Back to original programming.
Yes, yeah.
Very soon
here on the next episode.
Yeah, but this episode that we're going to re-air is one of my favorites, because you and I,
it's so good.
So many people point to the fact that you need a financial advisor or something like that, and it's not that it's not helpful for some folks, but in reality, you and I, we believe that a financial coach can be so much more helpful.
Yeah, a financial coach as opposed to an advisor
less expensive and more likely to be able to help you with some of those day-to-day money things, like you're learning instead of just kind of having someone take over on your behalf.
And sure.
Erica, by the way, is mm-hmm. one of the coolest, best financial coaches out there. So
yeah, absolutely. I think one of the differences too is like there's a difference between just knowing some of the rules, which is what CFPs oftentimes are focused on, as opposed to the behavior. Yeah. And that's one of the things that Erica addresses in this conversation. And it still resonates with me, because I remember we talked about, well, why can't you just get a friend, because you and I, we're buds. Mm-hmm. Why can't you just get a friend to hold you responsible? Like, they're impacting your behavior. But she had a fantastic answer as to why it is that she is going to be more effective than even your best bud.
Yeah. And sometimes you just need someone to walk alongside you mm-hmm. for all those specific questions that come up along the way as you're making progress. And a financial coach can be just that. And so,
exactly.
Yeah. If you want to hear from one of the best ones out there, someone with a lot of wisdom and a lot of perspective, make sure to listen to this episode. There's a lot of great advice in it. So yeah, let's get to that combo with Erica Taylor.
Here we go.
Welcome to How to Money. I'm Joel.
And I am Matt.
And today we're talking why you need a money coach in your corner with Erica Young.
So our guest today, Erica Young, is the financial coach that she never had. As a newlywed couple, Erica and her husband, they discovered that it's actually pretty easy to become just like the average U.S. household that now has over $150,000 in debt. It's the norm, honestly, and if you don't have a plan to avoid debt, you're going to likely find yourself falling into that trap. But that is not the path that Erica continued along with. She was determined to change her family tree. And now she helps others who are seeking financial freedom in their lives. Erica started her company, Tailored Made Budgets, where she creates custom plans for her clients that give them the tools and the knowledge to cut their stress levels by increasing their savings and decreasing their debt. That is what we're talking about today. Erica, thank you so much for joining us today on the podcast.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Erica, we're glad to have you. And the first question we ask everybody who comes on the show is what they like to splurge on, because that kind of tells us something about the guest pretty quickly. Matt and I, we like to splurge on beer. Everybody knows that. But what is it that you like to splurge on in the here and now while you're being smart with your money, you're saving and investing still for your future?
Yeah, well, I love vacations. And I don't just like a little getaway. I mean, those are fine. Those are fine. But I like to spend good money on great food, a beautiful, like a villa. I typically will go in with some friends, do a couples trip, and we do the biggest and best that we can, honestly,
by renting.
Yeah, like, so that is my little guilty pleasure. I will spend lots of money on vacation, and I plan to do that for the rest of my life.
There it is. Makes,
I want to travel with Erica's crew now.
Me too. I'm we're so used to just like sort of slumming it, Joel. Like, we go to the beach often. I mean, every summer we go to the beach together with our families, and it's a fine balance between finding the absolute cheapest place, but something that's nice enough to keep our families happy, but
preferably not roach infested. But
nothing that we would call a villa.
Yeah.
Yes.
We haven't done the villa thing. That sounds nice.
Oh my gosh, it's great. It's so much fun. And it's so much more, you know, economical when you've got a bunch of people with you.
Yeah,
so that is very true.
When you do this, how many couples typically do you like to... Like, I feel like there's an optimal range, because above a certain amount, there's drama. They may as well be filming, because we're going to make this a reality show.
You are correct about
right?
that. Now, last year we did 6 couples, but right. I've been on a cruise with 15.
Oh,
so
15 couples.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. So cruise, you can facilitate that a lot easier. But what I'll say is, I mean, you know, you just take people you like, and then you have to weed out those that don't work so well.
right.
It's amazing, too, how people that you like at home, maybe you don't travel the same with them. So you have to kind of figure out who makes a good travel companion. Not every good buddy actually turns out to be a great travel buddy.
That's true, too. Yeah. I have learned that as well.
Well, hopefully you're able to remain friends with America, even though it didn't work out at the villa. But let's talk about debt. Because you and your husband, y'all were newlyweds, and you were like around $90,000 in debt. So we want to hear your story a little bit here. What kinds of debt had you racked up? And specifically, too, how did you get to the point where you realized that having that much debt, that was a problem for y'all?
Honestly, we were pretty normal. I mean, this was 25 years ago, to be honest, and we were normal. We had credit card debt. Between the two of us, we had about 7 credit cards. None of them were super duper high, but when you've got that many, it's a lot to juggle. And then we also had car debt, 2 cars between us, and we had student loans, which was the biggest portion of it. So more than half of that $90,000 was in student loans. And that was normal. Honestly, everyone expects to have a car note. Everybody expects to have a credit card or two. And then, of course, you can't get out of college, quote unquote, without college debt. So it was pretty normal. We didn't have anything that we were really overspending on. This is actually how we started our life. We got out of college and this is what we had. It wasn't abnormal at the time. And that's part of the challenge, is that we're told that it's okay. And so we do it. And when I was an engineer working in corporate America and my husband was a sales professional, there were a few moments in those early months of our relationship when we got married that we realized, hold on a second, there's so much more month left and we don't have enough money. So between the car payments and the student loans and all that, we started to realize, gosh, there's not a whole lot left, even though we're working professionals, you know? And so we realized that we needed a game plan. And that's when we started to have the revelation that, man, if I can't go to lunch with my coworkers and I'm an engineer, there's a bigger problem here.
Because it's not like your salary was crummy as an engineer. Like, you probably are making decent money.
Exactly. And so, but we also had decent debt, right? So our debt payments amounted to over $1,000 a month. And then you add on that we had a baby quick, you know, in the first year and a half of our marriage. And then we had another one 4 years later. And so, you know, you start compounding these things and life is expensive and you're not sure what you're supposed to be doing. So we quickly realized, I mean, honestly, I'm kind of glad that it happened early, because we were foolish enough to believe that anything was possible. So we went after it, and that you know, forced us to get real with our money early on, when a lot of my clients today, they have waited until their 40s and 50s and they're like, oh my gosh, my kids are going to college and now I need to get my act together. So, you know, there are benefits to tripping over yourself early in life.
That's true. Learning some lessons before you get too far along. I love what you said there. You said we were pretty normal. And there's so many people that have, you know, tens of thousands of dollars worth of student loan debt. And they're like, I see the headlines. I'm not as bad off as some of those folks. And they've got a little bit of credit card debt here. They got a little bit of car debt over here. And it's like, well, that's normal, right? I'm actually, maybe I'm doing a little bit better than average even. But you began to realize that this wasn't the normal you wanted to live in. So how did you and your husband and young kiddos, how did y'all start tackling that debt? What was your approach to paying it down?
Well, the first thing that my husband did was he actually took my credit card away from me, because I was the one that
time
was
for our confession.
Yes, this was confession time. Like I was swiping that card to have lunch. I was swiping that card to do the things that did not fit inside of our normal routine or what we could use in our checking account. And so I it was confession time, and I had to share that, because honestly, we can't continue to go into debt if we're really trying to get out. So something has to stop here. And so that was, you know, a real honest moment that we had to have. And so he literally put it in a bowl of ice and well, put it in a bowl of water, put it in the freezer so that it could turn into ice. And it was before those times when you plugged in your account number or your debit card number into Amazon.
Didn't
or
have
you
the
had
autofill.
You were physically swiping.
Yeah.
Exactly. And so that was the restraint, you know, and the physical representation of we're not doing this anymore. And then honestly, we just added up all of our expenses. I mean, a lot of people are very nervous to add up and look at and face how much they spend on a monthly basis. Uh-huh. And when we did that, we realized there was opportunity. It wasn't what we thought it was going to look like, and we had to face that and just say, okay, so now what are we going to do about it? So I think a reality check is the very first step for lots of people.
That's true. Yeah. So, okay. So as you started down this path, did you have any setbacks along the way? Well, I'm going to go ahead and kind of reveal, I'll spill the beans, because I know you had some car issues, you had some car problems, and you did have to go back into debt.
Yes.
But I guess what I specifically want to know is, how did you keep that from derailing you? Because I think sometimes when you've got this, you've got this goal up ahead of you, and you know this is something you want to achieve, but then you kind of get hit with this hurdle, it might derail you a little bit. So I want to know how you were able to overcome that and continue pressing on towards that goal of yours.
Yeah. So our car died and it needed an engine. And we did not have the $1,000 that was needed in order for us to get that car resurrected. And so we went without a car for a season, really just a month, when I was with the new child and my husband was able to go to work. But then we got another car, you know, loan. And so what we realized was, man, okay, so if we're not prepared, then that means we go further into debt. Mm-hmm. And that was kind of the last straw. That was the last thing that we said, all right, we had to add this to our debt. That's what put us over that 90,000. And so we said, all right, let's figure this out. We added everything up and we just said, we can't be back in this place again where we are unprepared, meaning we don't have anything in savings and we can't weather an emergency. And so that was the first thing we did, was get a little bit of an emergency fund so that we didn't have to depend on credit cards. And then we started tackling the debt seriously at that point, so that we, you know, could reduce our expenses, because honestly, having over $1,000 or $1,200 a month going out in payments was also why we couldn't afford to get the car fixed. And so those are the things that we started to realize and say, okay, early on, if we get this right now, then maybe we don't have to return to this place again.
I love it. Yeah. So it sounds like instead of that hampering your ability to reach that goal, it just poured some fuel on the fire.
It did.
And it caused you to maybe get after it even more than you were before.
It did. Yeah. And I think we were also committed to the fact that, you know, we wanted something different than what we grew up with. The truth of the matter is that both of my husband and I came from single parent households, and we saw our mom struggle. And we said, well, we've got two incomes. We should be able to do a little bit better than that, right? And so we knew that there was something to this, but we couldn't, you know, we tripped over ourselves a little bit in the beginning, but it takes determination and it takes resolve. And so we were on the same page where that was concerned. Sometimes the methods weren't exactly the same, because you're never going to always agree. But it was good to know that, like, we had the same type of foundation because we really just wanted to make sure that we had a better future for our kids than what we had.
Yeah, it's good to know. And Matt and I have talked about this before. Being on the same team, recognizing that you're on the same team, when a setback happens, it keeps you from pointing fingers at each other. You're like, wait a second, we're on the same team. This setback affects us both. And so let's find a way to overcome this hurdle together. And I got to say, sometimes I'm overly optimistic. My wife tells me that often. Like, she loves my optimism, but she's also like, it also grates on me sometimes because you're completely unrealistic. And so I have to realize too that when I'm saying, oh, it's going to take me 30 minutes to do this repair around the house, knowing that it's probably actually in all likelihood going to take me an hour and a half to do that task. Sometimes when it comes to a debt payoff plan, you have to have a little bit of realism so that that one hurdle, it doesn't send you reeling. And so knowing, building in some place for imperfection, I think is important in that plan too, right?
Right, absolutely. And don't expect for perfection from your partner.
Yeah.
Because you know that you aren't perfect either, right? Like, it's super easy to point a finger at someone else because you can see their flaws. You don't want anyone to see yours.
Right.
And
right.
So I love the fact that you even said, you know, we have to remember that we're a team. One of the things my husband still does to this day is say out loud, we're on the same team. Like, he says it to remind himself and to remind me, we're on the same team. We want to go the same place. And so while we may not agree on sometimes the method, that still means that we need to figure out how we're going to get, we're going to, you know, where we're going to go together.
So, okay. So it took you how long to pay off that debt, and how did you celebrate at the end of that debt payoff? Did you rent a villa? What'd you do?
That's awesome. Well, it took us about 5 years. We had two kids in that time. We had another setback was my husband got laid off. You know, we've had a lot. We had a family loss where we had emergencies. We had to use our emergency fund and all of that. So there was a lot going on in there. I do think, and this is the reason why I do what I do, I do think that we could have made some different decisions and gotten it paid off a little bit faster if we had a coach. And that's why I jumped in to do this work, is to help people to avoid some of the pitfalls so that they can get out of debt faster than they would have on their own. And we celebrated along the way. I'll be very honest and say, when we paid off a car, we celebrated.
There you go.
And so for us, you know, sometimes that was just a nice fancy dinner. When we paid everything off, honestly, I walked away from my job. Like, that was the biggest thing, was that I could leave that position and start the work that I wanted to do myself. And so that was a huge financial change in our house, but it was one of the biggest reasons why getting out of debt was so critical for us, because it just created an opening for us to be able to, you know, change the way we do life. And I've not looked back. It's been 17 years.
Oh, wow.
And I have no regrets at all. No, I wasn't making today's money back then when I first started. Yeah. But because we were out of debt, we could do it. And, you know, with little kids, sometimes that's the biggest thing that you need, is to be able to have some flexibility.
Uh-huh.
I bet. Yeah. So, I mean, was that difficult to kind of transition from that nicer, high-paying engineer job where you're going out to lunch, or maybe not because your credit cards were frozen at that point, bringing those leftovers to work? That's how I roll. Even still, like, even when you eliminate those, you know, $1,000 a month in debt payments, I'm sure you're making more than $12,000 a year.
Yeah.
Like, you are going to feel that impact of losing that income. Was that difficult for you to know that you're taking a hit when it came to your income?
It was an adjustment. It was definitely an adjustment. And it took a couple of years, in all truth, to get the business off and running the way I wanted it to. But I honestly didn't leave until I did have some income in the business. It just didn't replace the whole amount. And so, yeah, I think, honestly, I know this sounds crazy, but one of the bigger sacrifices that we made during that time was that I couldn't invest in my retirement, right? So I wasn't doing that. And that was something that I had previously been doing. And one of the biggest pieces of advice I would give someone is probably have a bigger emergency fund than I had.
What did y'all have at the time?
Yeah,
about
at the time,
months?
Oh my gosh, we had solidly 3 months. Like, we didn't have like a whole year or anything.
That's not
like
bad.
That.
Three's good.
And so I would if you're going to become an entrepreneur and you're not really sure what your income is going to look like, I would definitely expand that at least 6 months, if not 12, just to be on the safe side. For me, that would have meant staying longer at work. And we probably could have made that happen. But I really felt strongly that it was time for me to go. And so I now advise people to do what I didn't know to do, which is to have more money saved. But, you know, I think, honestly, I still have no regrets because it's been a great ride. And it was the time that I needed to go. And quite frankly, we've been able to overcome that, right? Yeah. So it just took a little bit. We slowed down for a couple
years. It's not the ideal way to do it, but you got through it. And then now you're coaching other people to do it even better, which I love. And I love, too, just that reality, the realization that an emergency fund, that's even specific to an individual or an individual situation. It's like, hey, you want to quit your job and become an entrepreneur? You need more runway. You need more financial backup. But let's say you dual income, great jobs that aren't going anywhere. You can have a smaller emergency fund, and that's okay. I want to ask you too about that transition to coaching that you talked about. You know, you talked about it took me 5 years. I think we could have done it faster. I want to basically help other people learn from the things that I was learning along the way, that if I had known that from the get-go, it probably would have happened a little bit quicker. Talk to me more about like how that fostered in you, that desire to help others, and what actually like kind of plunged you into, you know what, I have to do this full time as a job.
Yeah. Well, what's interesting is that because of our journey, I had people asking me questions. I wasn't silent about the fact that we were trying to get out of debt. So there would be times where we would say no to things, or we would say yes to something different, or we were taking a class, or I was reading a book. But I was immersing myself in the work of trying to figure out how to get out and stay out of debt. I was talking about my budget. I was vocal. And so people would ask me questions. My pastor asked me a question. He said, hey, would you help somebody else do what you are doing?
There you go.
I said, sure, absolutely. And so the first couple of clients, two or three people that I worked with, were pro bono just to kind of see if I liked it. Mm-hmm. And in that time, I was like, I loved seeing the light bulb come on. At that time, I was actually going to someone's house and we were looking at their bank statements on the table. And when there would be a pivotal moment, like, did you know that your dining out is $500 a month? Did you know that your kids' activities was costing you this much? And the light bulb comes on and they're like, wow, I had no idea. I thought it was so much less than that. Yeah. And then they start to realize why things have been so challenging. I actually went into someone's home and I saw immediately why they were in debt. They were not a hoarder necessarily, but they had tons and tons of things for their kids all over the place. And so it was very obvious.
Yeah.
And so those are things that, looking back, give perspective to why people need somebody to walk with them through the process versus just saying, oh, I can do this on my own. And most of the time, people don't do it on their own. They say they're going to do it. They're like, oh, I'm going to give this a month and I'm going to see if I can do it myself. And then they realize they've done absolutely nothing.
No progress.
And so accountability is huge in getting people to move the needle.
I love that. That's so good. I mean, accountability, there's many other reasons too why it might make sense to have a financial coach in your corner. We're going to talk all about coaching, what it entails. We'll get to all that right after this break.
Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So, if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. They are committed to high ethical standards and even had to pass a rigorous exam before they could become a CFP professional.
They offer financial planning and services that take a more comprehensive view of your financial and personal circumstances and are customized for your needs. Certified financial planner professionals can offer advice on a wide range of issues like reviewing your investment portfolio's allocation, handling an inheritance, rolling over a company retirement plan, building education savings, and so much more.
That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org. I'm guessing that a lot of listeners are starting to solidify their summer travel plans. We always like to get the families together, Matt, for a week at the beach every single summer. We've already got that trip to St. Simon's on the calendar. Pumped for that. But sometimes those vacations get expensive. So what better way to offset some of those costs than to have your home earning some money while you're away?
That's right. Why let it sit empty when it could be earning extra income? It's the financially smart thing to do. So think it through. Maybe you've got some extra space in your home, or maybe you have an entire house to host. Or maybe you're just going on vacation and your home is sitting empty. In every case, you can Airbnb it. You already have the space, so it won't be a huge adjustment.
I mean, the way I see it, if you're not using your space, you have two options. You can let it just sit there empty, or you do some optimizing and make some money off it. Really, if you think about it, you already have an Airbnb. You just need to start using it. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. Spring cleaning is kind of an annual rite of passage. We've all got to do it, minimize the junk that we have in our house. Emily and I, we just cleaned our closets out. It took hours, but it was so worth it. Now we've only got stuff in there that we love, and it's easier to find everything too. And so, you know, while cleaning your closets is helpful, well, there's something else you can do for your family this spring. Shopping for life insurance with Policy Genius, for example, is a really important part of your financial planning for the year.
That's right. Yeah. And here is the thing that's important to remember, because you might be thinking you don't need to check out Policy Genius because you've got a policy through work. But even if you have a life insurance policy through your job, it may not offer you enough protection for your family's needs, and it may not follow you if you leave your job. With Policy Genius, you can find life insurance policies that start at just $292 per year for $1 million of coverage. Some options offer same-day approval and avoid unnecessary medical exams. Policy Genius works for you, not the insurance companies, and that means they don't have an incentive to recommend one insurer over another, so you can trust their guidance.
Save time and money and provide your family with a financial safety net using Policy Genius. Head to policygenius.com to get your free life insurance quotes and see how much you could save. That's policygenius.com. All right, we are back from the break. We're still talking with Erica Young about why you need a money coach in your corner. And I think, I mean, Erica, you just set it up perfectly, right? That we always say we're going to do something. Getting around to it is another matter. I am maybe the king of that. Remember, going back to my college days, my procrastination levels were basically superior to anyone else's. And so I want to know, though, from you, like, what are the signs maybe that someone needs the help of a financial coach, who maybe how can someone know that they should stop trying to do it on their own, and that they really just do need to outsource it? They need to hire someone to kind of, you know, give them the right kick in the butt.
Yeah, well, one of the very first signs is that you have debt that hasn't moved. Your debt is either stagnant or it's growing. And so if you're not making progress in that area, that's one sign. Another one is wishful or magical thinking. So we like to believe that we are better than we are, that we can do this ourselves, or that at some point, just like with weight loss, we're like, oh, I want to lose 10 pounds. And then we're magically like, oh, it's going to take me this amount of time. Well, not if you don't change something, right? Like, we're wishful thinking about lots of things in our life. And so that could be also something to wake up to. And then, honestly, I would say, you know, if you realize that there are things in your life that you want, but you haven't been able to achieve. So going on a nice vacation, having an emergency fund, giving to organizations, or being a part of something bigger than yourself. Mm-hmm. And those things have not been able to happen. You're realizing that your goals are bigger than your want to. Your actions are not lining up with the vision that you have. And so sometimes a coach can help you realize that what's missing, really, and, you know, the little kick in the tush that you need in order to, like, get started. So that's having somebody on your team side by side with you who's been down the road. And I've worked with hundreds of people. It just helps you to see what you can't see. I mean, sometimes we're just blind to what's really in the way.
Absolutely. Where maybe we could see what's going on in other people's lives. It's like, oh, they should stop spending money on this.
Right.
Yep. But when it comes to what you're spending your money on, it can be difficult to recognize. And so, I mean, you're basically saying this, and you said this before the break, but it sounds like that reality check is the first thing that folks need to do.
Yeah.
Do you have other, like, do you have different tactics that you take with different folks who come to you? Or, like, is it 100% customizable when you're coaching somebody? Or, are there a few steps that everyone should follow?
Yeah, there are steps everyone should follow. It's customizable once I get to know who you are. So one, the reality check where you look at all of your income and all of your outgo. Expenses specifically need to be broken down by category. Look at that first. I typically say have a glass of wine, get some chocolate, put on some mood music or have a candle burning, something to make you kind of get into that good mood. But that's the first thing. And then I actually have an assessment that I do with people to understand their behaviors and their habits around money. And so there's a checklist, if you will. You kind of go through and rate everything. And I think it's really important for people to understand what their behaviors currently are, assess what's really going on here. That's huge. I also think that adding up your debt, and by that, you might have to go look at your credit report to make sure you're not missing anything, but face where you are, because if you don't do that, you don't know how you can get to where you really need to be. It's kind of like the GPS lady. She has to locate you right where you are today,
right,
before you put in that address of where you're trying to go so that you can get the straightest, quickest path there. But you can't get there if she doesn't know where you are. So we've got to locate where you are first. And sometimes that's the hardest part. Once people are able to face that, then they're like, okay, I think I'm open now to hearing what Erica has to say about how we're going to get this done.
Yeah. Sometimes you got to take like all of the gloss, all of the sheen off, and you got to like look at all those naked numbers and all of them, not hiding anything, right?
Yeah.
So that you can get a full scope of what actually needs to happen. And Erica, your coaching business is called Tailor Made Budgets.
That's right.
And so it makes me think, like, what does it take to create a budget that actually helps people? Because some people are scared of the word budget.
Yes.
They think of it as like a four-letter word. So
sure.
How do you help people create a budget that they actually use, not one that just kind of like looks good in an Excel file that gets quickly abandoned?
Yeah. One of the biggest things is to know the family, know the household, understand, are there medical things going on in the house? Or understand, you know, how old the children are, if there are kids in the house, understand what the goals are. Where do you see yourself in 6 months? Why is this important? Making it customized to that household. No budget should be exactly like the neighbor. And so it's important to understand who it is that I'm working with and make it realistic for them. So for instance, if people have an affinity for, you know, whole or clean eating or what have you, I understand that that could potentially cost a little bit more. I also have to understand that the age of the kids makes a difference, the activities the kids are in, and things like that. So just knowing what the household is up to. If there are glaring red flags, that's one of the things that over the years I have gotten a whole lot better at making sure that I let people know, here's the big hairy elephant in the room that we've got to deal with. Because if there were only one thing to change, I want people to understand what that thing is that's really going to make a difference in their finances. So the budget can be very detailed and it can be very realistic and tailored for that household. But I'm always looking for that one thing that if they only did that, it would transform everything. And so I'm looking for that needle in the haystack. And sometimes it's bigger than you think, but that's sometimes the thing that will help people really get unstuck, if you will.
Right. Well, I mean, can you share some examples? Like, what are some of those red flags? What are some of those big old budget busting line items that are just wrecking people's finances?
Well, I'll start with some of the little ones that everybody has right now. So one of those would be subscriptions. So have people add up all of their subscriptions. I had one family do this a couple of years ago. It's about $150 in subscriptions. And I thought, wow. And this is not like cable. It's all of the little Netflix and Hulu and games for the kids and all that. Uh-huh. It added up to 150. They had no idea. And so we just go through the process of what's needed and what isn't. What do you use? What don't you use? And they cut it down to like $50.
Nice.
Amazon is huge. Amazon all on its own right now is big.
Yes.
And that is not always $50 or $100. Is that something, and people will justify it saying, well, we get diapers and we get groceries or... And I still think it's important to add up what's happening at Amazon, because what it really is just convenient.
Yes.
If you can potentially spend less money elsewhere and all that if you pay attention to that. But a lot of the times, the big glaring flags are a vehicle that's completely out of whack and doesn't make sense. I typically will, you know, the very last thing I would even offer is that the house is too expensive. I don't typically go there with that unless it's absolutely necessary.
But so I'm sure folks feel like you're undermining their security.
Right,
like,
yeah.
this is our home. What are you talking about?
Yeah, I don't go there unless it's absolutely necessary. But I have had people who are paying for college for their kids, taking it out of their retirement funds. That's a big, hairy red flag to me, you know, especially when the kid isn't doing well, right? And so that's, you know, tens of thousands of dollars potentially going down the drain, and the kid can get a loan. I don't want them to, but if it's your retirement versus their college, I'm picking your retirement first.
That's Yeah, I completely agree with you. It makes me think that everything in life is a trade-off, right? And,
yeah.
and that's especially the case with our money. So that's kind of what you're walking people through, too, to a certain extent, is here's the thing. This is what's kind of busting the budget over here.
Yeah.
And obviously, we're going to have to make some sort of trade-off. Maybe we got to sell this car and we got to get into something more affordable. But how do you talk to people? How do you coach people into thinking through trade-offs with how they spend their money and kind of the things that they can be doing with that money instead?
Yeah. Well, really, I ask a bunch of questions. It's really, okay, so tell me more about this loan. How long is it? How long have you had it? Tell me about, you know, tell me about the vehicle, right? Like, honestly, for families who have little kids, they need a certain kind of vehicle. They're not going to be able to be in an Escort, for instance, right? So, so I want to understand. I ask a bunch of questions, and then I'll say things like, how was that serving you? Is this helpful? Is this necessary? What could you do differently? I want them to open up and share their thoughts. And really, when I look at the overall assessment of their situation, I see their budget, I see their assets, I see their debt. And then if that is the smoking gun, it's really, okay, so if you did this, if you made this one change, here is what's possible. You could get out of debt in this amount of time versus this amount of time. Or those dollars could go towards your retirement future. Or you could save that for your kids' education. So it's really helping them to see that something else is possible, or one of their goals could be achieved even faster if they made this, you know, big change, if you will.
Yeah.
And sometimes, honestly, people say, I'm not willing to make the change now, but if we do A, B, and C, could we get the same effect? And it makes them start thinking about things that they wouldn't have thought of before.
Yeah.
So that's awesome, too. So,
yeah.
You know, the truth is, I want them to own their decision. And so I really, you know, ask all the questions that are necessary for them to have their own light bulb moment.
That's so great, because when you have the light bulb yourself as opposed to someone telling you what to do,
yes.
it's so much more impactful, and you're more likely to make a different decision moving forward. And when you've also connected that trade-off to this greater goal that you have, you become so much more excited to make that. You're like, wait a second, this car is holding me back. I didn't even like the car. I didn't realize that was the problem. It wasn't that big of a deal to me. But this other goal, like, we wanted that. We want that villa every summer. Like, we want that sweet summer trip. And so, I don't know. It's amazing how when you connect the trade-off to that greater goal, it just completely changes the equation.
Absolutely. Yep, absolutely. And they get to own their decision. I really want people to feel like it was their choice versus Erica's prodding and pushing.
Mm-hmm.
That's
like
not
inception.
What I want.
Erica's planting the planting this kernel, this
and then
seed
they have to discover it
of an idea, and they stumble upon it. It's like, wait a minute, that was my idea, right?
That's right.
Well, I mean, speaking of kind of like mind tricks, you know better than anyone here, like doing this one-on-one work, it's never just a numbers problem here oftentimes. Talk about the dual role that you play in helping people with some of their deeper rooted psychological issues with money, alongside the need to provide some of that education, some of that accountability, where they might just be, you know, missing some of that basic personal finance knowledge. I think sometimes you might be diving in even deeper than you realize when you're trying, as you're kind of unearthing some of these some of these deeper issues, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I will say I'm not a marriage counselor. I will say I'm not a therapist, if you will, but I get into some of the stuff that couples need to understand, or that a single person hasn't allowed themselves to think about. So your money past, right? So all of the things that you learned as a child coming up in your home of origin, and how that is affecting you today. So for instance, I'll just talk about myself. I won't talk about a client, but like my husband and I, like I said, we grew up in single parent households. We both saw financial dysfunction. And you know, I saw feast and famine lifestyle all the time just to make ends meet, as did he. And so I interpreted that in a different way than he did. He really likes to have, you know, he wants to stack cash. And I'm more of the longer term. I want to make sure I'm okay in the future, because I was always worried that I'd have to take care of my parents. And so the way we interpreted our past experience affected how we did life. And the funny thing is, I'm a financial coach, and he and I would differ on how much we needed for savings because we had different ways that we interpreted our past.
Did you ever pull the card? But I'm a money coach, so yeah. I get to make the decision.
You know what? Sometimes that happens. No. But I will say, like, those past experiences affect how we do life today. And a lot of people don't put enough emphasis or give themselves the freedom to sit back and think through how that is showing up in life today. I had a client who had their own realization about how dependent they were on their parents' approval and how they spent their money. Mm. And, you know, the wife just really started crying and just said, wow, I hadn't seen it that way. I had no idea that I was looking for them to be okay with my money decisions. Mm. And the husband said, I'm so glad that we had this conversation, because this was worth all of the coaching, because I didn't know how to reach this point. I had no idea how to get here. And now that he knows, now that they both are aware of what she's allowed, you know, she allowed her parents sort of to interfere in how they, you know, manage their own money, they can work through that. But they didn't know that was happening. And so those are things that we get into that's beyond the numbers, you know, hidden sometimes behind, oh, we just need a budget. There's probably more reasons why the budget hasn't worked in the past, and we've got to get to some of those root issues in order for you to really be able to stick with the budget too.
Wow. I love it. Thank you so much for sharing all that. I mean, there's a lot of good, beautiful wisdom in there. And actually, you know, you have so much good thoughts, I think, around when it comes to money and relationships and how couples can talk about money well together, Erica. We want to ask you a few questions on that topic, and we'll get to those right after this. Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So, if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. They are committed to high ethical standards and even had to pass a rigorous exam before they could become a CFP professional.
They offer financial planning and services that take a more comprehensive view of your financial and personal circumstances and are customized for your needs. Certified financial planner professionals can offer advice on a wide range of issues like reviewing your investment portfolio's allocation, handling an inheritance, rolling over a company retirement plan, building education savings, and so much more.
That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org. I'm guessing that a lot of listeners are starting to solidify their summer travel plans. We always like to get the families together, Matt, for a week at the beach. Every single summer, we've already got that trip to St. Simons on the calendar. Pumped for that. But sometimes those vacations get expensive. So what better way to offset some of those costs than to have your home earning some money while you're away?
That's right. Why let it sit empty when it could be earning extra income? It's the financially smart thing to do. So think it through. Maybe you've got some extra space in your home, or maybe you have an entire house to host, or maybe you're just going on vacation and your home is sitting empty. In every case, you can Airbnb it. You already have the space, so it won't be a huge adjustment.
I mean, the way I see it, if you're not using your space, you have two options. You can let it just sit there empty, or you do some optimizing and make some money off it. Really, if you think about it, you already have an Airbnb. You just need to start using it. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
If you're listening to this podcast right now and you're a small business owner, listen up. Upswell Marketing would like to remind you that when customers choose your small business, they're actually choosing you. So focus on super serving your existing customers and let Upswell handle the pipeline generation of new leads and customers. They do everything from hyper-targeting best fit prospects through campaign optimization. Upswell Marketing's unique approach includes direct mail, search engine marketing, and social media ads, and has fueled more than 10,000 small business success stories. Upswell specializes in developing customized direct response campaigns and is now offering a no-obligation free assessment of your current marketing strategies. Not to mention, new customers also receive 15% off their first order when they mention that they heard about Upswell on this podcast. For more information, visit upswellmarketing.com. That's upswellmarketing.com.
All right, we're back from the break. We're still talking about money coaching. And Joel, you kind of teased to money and relationships. Erica kind of got into how she's, you know, she plays, she gets to pretend to be a couples counselor every now and then. Before we kind of talk more about relationship stuff, one of the things you mentioned was that one of the roles that a financial coach can play is accountability, right? Like they are there keeping you accountable. Is it possible to get that same benefit by having a friend provide that accountability? What I want to ask here, the core of my question is, I want to know the difference between having a friend that's holding you accountable and someone like you who's able to provide more of that in-depth, full-service, one-on-one coaching. Can you talk about that for a second?
Absolutely. I think everybody needs a friend that can hold them accountable. However, most of the time, our friends want us happy. Our friends are very agreeable. And for women, sometimes that is a shopping buddy or someone who is going to say, oh, I understand. Just do it. You deserve it. And men don't say those things, but it is inherent in, hey, let's go hang out with the guys and we're going to do what we do. You know what I mean? Like, we all have our ways in which we live. And it's great to have a buddy who's on the journey with you, but they're not going to give you the tough love. They also will not give you, you're not going to be super open and honest with your friend. Let's just be clear. You're not going to say how much you spent on dining out. You are not going to say how much that dress cost. You're not going to say how much golfing was with the fellas. You're not. You're going to simply gloss over it because we inherently do not want the worst of us to be seen by everybody.
Yeah.
With me, you don't have a choice. On that first meeting, I mean, honestly, my clients are paying me to be honest with them.
Yeah.
Because there's not a whole lot of other places where they're going to be honest. They're not going to tell family members. They're not going to tell friends. People are embarrassed, ashamed. There's a lot of emotion around money. They don't want their friends to know how much they make. Let's just be clear that there's a lot that we aren't sharing. So accountability can only go so far with the people in our circles. One of the things that I really enjoy about being a coach is that I'm pretty anonymous, if you will. And so
you're not going to show up at the front door.
Exactly. I don't do that anymore, right? Like, I did that in the first couple of years. But the cool thing is that I could literally have a neighbor as a client and we might not even know we're neighbors, right? Mm. And so
nobody else knows, yeah.
Right.
Especially, I think
Yeah, so the cool thing is, like, that's the other thing is I'm asking the hard questions right in the beginning. And once we get the hard stuff done, we can work through everything else. And I just, you know, really have a system of these are the things that we talk about and this is what you ought to expect. And so in that process is exactly how people really get to understand what this looks like and they get used to being vulnerable and open. And because I'm a prodder, I ask a bunch of questions. They've got to get them answered. And I actually, so there have been times when I'm like, I think you need to see a counselor for that. I think that that's what makes sense here. And
pushing them towards getting some actual help from a licensed therapist.
Yes, absolutely. Especially for, you know, in marriage, especially if there's any type of emotional challenges that people are having. I did that just recently because I think that people think that if they get the money right, that all of these other problems will be okay. Like, we'll be able to communicate well. No, actually, I really need you to have a solid foundation of communication first.
That's right.
Because if we start talking about the money, it's just going to uproot quite a bit of things. And if you can't work through those things behind the scenes, that can be challenging. So I know those are things that just a friend probably wouldn't say.
That's true.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Bad money fights, disagreements, how you communicate about money, like, those are all just symptoms of underlying either health or unhealth.
Yeah.
That's right.
And you mentioned, obviously, you're not a marriage therapist, which, you know, but you have also a lot of wisdom
based on
20 years plus of marriage, right? And through helping hundreds of clients. So I am curious to talk to you a little bit about money and relationships. You talk to us maybe about having productive money conversations. Like, what if a couple keeps having the same fight over and over? Like, the same money issue is kind of at the root of those arguments. How can they progress and get past those, just the recurring, it feels like it's a record on repeat, same thing over and over. How can they maybe move forward past just the same unproductive money fights?
Yeah. Well, first of all, any money conversation, I encourage people to keep it very short. So we are not going to have a, you know, 3-hour money summit on our finances on day one. We're not doing that.
That sounds exhausting.
Exactly. And so I think where people tend to go wrong is they say, oh, we're going to get this all together and fix it and blah, blah, blah. And then they wear each other out on day one and they don't even come back to it for a couple of months because it was so tiring. So do yourself a favor and schedule 15 or 20 minutes and talk about one thing. The other thing is, and you know, ground rules for whatever that one thing is and how to, you know, how you want to see it resolved and that kind of thing, and have a takeaway. But if you are continuing to have the same fight over and over, what I'm hearing is that one or both of you are not being heard. So somebody is continually bringing up the same subject because they feel unheard. Or you keep going back to that mountain that you can't climb because somebody is not heard. And so one of the tricks of communication, and this is that, you know, counselor, therapist side, is repeat what you believe you heard. Like, so what I hear you saying is blah, blah, blah.
There you go.
Or did you mean blah, blah, blah? Is this correct? Blah, blah, blah. And then, you know, the whole point is, why are they saying that? Tell me more about why that's showing up. And so a lot of times with money matters, we take it so very personally. We've worked really hard for whatever income we're bringing in, or we feel responsible for spending the money or taking care of the household or whatever it is. And so it's very sensitive for a lot of people because it hits at the heart of time that you've put into whatever it is. And so we've got to really listen. And I think we're not really good at that. With social media, the idea that we can fast forward or rewind all of our, you know, TV shows and all of that, we don't have to listen to stuff. Yeah. Or the sound bites are so short that it doesn't leave room for real human connection. And so I think that we have to relearn how to do that. But I also think we need to not force either party, because usually there's a money nerd and there's a free spender in this equation. And we don't want the nerd to overwhelm the free spirit by this, you know, 3-hour long summit. 15 or 20 minutes on one topic. Let's understand how we're going to get this one thing done and then move forward. Yeah. And I think if people will take those couple of tips, they'll really, it'll really be very helpful.
That's so great. Yeah. I mean, you're talking about being financially naked and vulnerable with your partner. Like, how else do you, you know, you're talking about focusing 15 minutes, one topic. You're talking about listening. Yeah. Well, are there some other ways that you would encourage couples to get on the same page and work together to make this money progress? Those are some great tips. I would love if you had any more.
Yeah. So my book is called, you know, Naked and Unashamed for a Reason. I think it's really important for people to reveal some of the things that have made them feel a certain way, right? So what have you been ashamed about? What do you wish you hadn't done? Let's dream together. I think one of the biggest ways that we can get on the same page as a couple is to dream. What do you see 5 or 10 years down the line? Let's not talk about the budget today. Let's talk about, what do you see in the future? What would you love to see happen? Is there a business in your heart? What does retirement look like? Would you love to see the kids go to college and be able to participate in that? Like, what is it that makes your heart light up? And get on the same page there. Let's be a cheerleader for our partner's future. Or let's say, oh my gosh, I had no idea we were on the same page there. We never talked about it. We don't give ourselves the opportunity to think about down the line because we're so worried about the things today. And so I think that that's a really great way to get on the same page and to fully understand what each other wants.
Yeah. What just a great thing to do as a couple on so many levels, but on a money level too, right? Like just dreaming together.
Yeah.
I think sometimes maybe, especially if you've been married for the longer you've been together, sometimes it's harder to retain some of the forward-looking momentum and some of the excitement about the future because you're in the day-to-day, especially if you've got young kids like Matt and I do. It's like life just overwhelms you. And so you have to kind of come back to the table and start dreaming together and reminding each other about what you love about one another and why you're excited to build a life together.
I mean, I think one of the other things too that I'm learning, I'm talking with some friends, not everybody are great dreamers. I think like Kate and I, we are very forward looking, and we've talked to some other friends and they kind of absorb information around them in retrospect, and so they're able to live in the moment and see what they need to do now, or they're able to kind of look back on their past, and
they have a hard time looking forward.
And so I think it can be difficult sometimes to kind of cast that vision, look ahead, ask that question, what do you want to do in 5-10 years? And so I guess what I want to highlight here is the fact that it might take some work to do this dreaming, and I think there might be a lot of folks out there who are saying, I don't know. what are you talking about? What do I want to dream about? And so for those folks, it might take a little longer than just asking that question, but to actually spend some time thinking about what they want their life to look like.
Yeah. Well, and I think there's fun in experimentation. So it may not be five years down the line. I'm getting ready to be an empty nester. In about 3 months, both of my kids are going to be out of the house. And my dreaming session is really about, who does Erica want to be now? And what are the hobbies that will be uniquely my own? And what am I going to get out of the house to go do since I don't have high school events or a kid coming home and things like that? And what are me and my husband going to do together? So my dreaming really isn't about retirement. At this point, we feel pretty confident that we're going to be fine. But now, like, it's about how are we going to enjoy one another, and how are we going to enjoy ourselves, our life that we get to create now that they're doing their thing.
So, I like that. You got to kind of reassess those as different life stages take hold.
Exactly.
And you're entering a completely new one.
That's right. Absolutely.
Well, congratulations to you on that. And since you are, last question for you here, Erica, you have successfully raised kids to the point where they can leave and, you know, not have to hopefully move back into your basement.
There
I guess I want to know, I want to know how you involve your kids in money conversations throughout the years. Like, how did that work for you? How do you advise other people to include their children when they're talking about money? Because I grew up in a household where I heard money arguments. I heard very little in sort of positive money reinforcement. But then there are some people who are maybe too forthright with their kids about the finances. So yeah, do you have kind of a strategy or a way that you help people think about what it looks like to include their kids in money decisions and combos?
Yeah, so I think it's really good to make money normal, like normalize the whole conversation all throughout their lives. So age appropriate, obviously, you don't need to tell your two-year-old, oh my gosh, we have this much for retirement, right? Like, we're not talking that, but make it normal. So for instance, if you're going to get ice cream, it's totally fine to let the two-year-old hand the $5 bill over, that kind of stuff. It's normal. It's not, and I think it's, nowadays, we have to be very intentional because we don't use cash all the time. And so sometimes those are the things that are age appropriate that would be great to be intentional. As they get older, give them more responsibility, you know, work and reward, you know, chores and having them to learn their own, how to manage their own money and things like that. And then when they get a job, I think it's super important for teenagers to get a job. I think that balancing act in high school is very valuable. And my husband and I, we basically said, we'll pay half on your car, you pay the other half, you earn the money to pay the other half. And they both did it, and they both have vehicles that they, you know, my oldest, she kept her vehicle for 4 years through, or 6 years actually, the rest of high school and college, and my youngest is doing the same right now.
That's great.
And so, but the biggest conversation that I think parents need to have, if you have made money a normal thing to discuss along the way, is when they are a sophomore or a junior in high school and you begin to talk about what's next, if college is next, you really need to let them know what you are willing to do, what you are capable of doing in terms of helping them, or what it is, and or I should say, what it is they need to do in order to make their college, you know, goal a reality. It's really hard to have a conversation about hundreds of thousands of dollars if you haven't laid that foundation early.
Yep.
And then also set the expectation of we will spend this much on it, or we can't help at all, or whatever it is. Be honest, because I think that is the biggest impact for the rest of their lives, whether or not they're going to have student loan debt or not, or what it is that they need to do in order for them to be able to go to school for free or do something different. And so I think that's the biggest financial impact. But again, if you've made that foundation along the way, talking about money isn't scary. Tell them about, my kids knew we were getting out of debt. They knew when they were young. They knew what the difference between debt and debit was. Hmm. And so those kinds of things are very helpful and build that foundation for,
yeah,
I want to get out of college without debt because my parents didn't do it. And my oldest is graduating on Saturday and she's got no debt to speak of. And so I think it's really important that we, you know, build that foundation so that, you know, their biggest opportunity to make a difference in their future does not come with strings attached.
That's right. Yeah, it is hard to have those big ticket items when you haven't even talked about the day-to-day.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
I love that. That's so good. Have those conversations. Make money conversations normal. Make money normal. That's what you're trying to do here, Erica. That's what we're doing here with How to Money. We really appreciate you coming on the show and sharing all these nuggets of wisdom and just your experience with our listeners. If folks wanted to learn more about you, what you're up to, your coaching business as well, where should they head?
Yeah, so TaylorMadeBudgets.com is the place to find me. I'm on Instagram as well on TaylorMadeBudgets, and I love to interact with people individually on LinkedIn as well. You can find me there, Erica Young.
Erica, you're the best. Thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
All right, Matt, that was a phenomenal conversation with
so
Erica
good.
Young. So much good information, so much just wisdom, and we covered just a range of topics. We haven't really talked about money coaching to that extent before.
No, we haven't.
But she made a compelling case for hiring someone who is in your corner, who isn't your best friend. So I don't know. I'm curious to hear from you. What was your big takeaway from this combo?
It was related to that. So around the end is when she was talking about, like we were asking her about the trade-offs that we make in life and how does she walk someone through the different expenses that they're facing in life. And basically what she was saying and what she said she does is that she questions everything. Right. And so it's like, okay. And specifically, the question she brought up was, what value is this bringing to your life?
I think she said, how is this serving you? At one
point,
yeah,
that is what, that is
which
actually
is
what she said.
Yeah. Yeah.
But by questioning everything like that, I think it puts everything on the table. Like everything has the potential to be axed. And I think oftentimes, whether we are trying to DIY our own budget or maybe if we're working with a partner, but sometimes there are certain things that we're not willing to even address. But when she steps into the equation, she is asking everything, like you said, how is this serving you? And if you don't have a good answer, then it is worth considering removing that from your life. Mm-hmm. If you're looking to cut your expenses, if you're looking to climb out of debt, that is the fastest way to do that. You don't have to dedicate more time to earning more money to pay off that debt. Let's just start slashing some of these expenses. The reason why we always lead into our interviews by asking, what is your craft beer equivalent? Because there are things that we spend money on, but there should always be a good reason why it is that we spend money on those things. Mm-hmm. And so I love that that's something that she asks.
Yeah.
But yeah, how about you, man? What was your big takeaway?
Okay, so I love when she said that you need to face where you are. And there's
reality check.
Yeah, so instead of being like, I need to lose 20 pounds because I think I'm 20 pounds overweight. If you're really 50 pounds overweight, like you need to face the actual fact. You need to face the number on the scale so that you can then make a decent decision about where you need to go move from here.
Yeah. How are you supposed to lose 10 pounds if you don't even have a scale or if you refuse to get on it?
Exactly. Yeah. And so, you know, one of the things that she said is signs that you might need a financial coach is if your debt level hasn't moved, if you're not making any progress, or if you're falling victim to wishful thinking. And I thought those were all really good things to help people know when they need outside help. It's like, all right, are you just like believing it overly optimistically, maybe like I do sometimes on things not necessarily money related. I can be overly optimistic about my future. And I love the fact that I'm an optimist, but there are times when I do need to live in reality a little bit more. And so maybe if you're falling victim to that, if you constantly think, well, I'm going to do this, this is going to happen, I'm getting there, but you're not actually getting anywhere, the numbers don't indicate that you're making any progress, that might indicate that you need some sort of financial coach in your life in order to help you make some progress and point out maybe some of those flaws in your thinking or in some of your behavior. So I don't know. I think that's a good call. And I do think a financial coach. Sometimes people think, I need a financial planner. Well, a financial coach is actually completely different. And probably for most folks, what they need is a financial coach, not a financial planner. It's not about growing your investments to the sky. It's literally about changing some of those habits and behaviors and kind of focusing on some of those everyday things. And guess what? Financial coaches are typically quite a bit less expensive too.
A lot more affordable.
So I do think financial coaches are one of those things that are underrepresented and probably could help a whole lot more folks. So yeah, for folks who find themselves, I think, in a position like this, I think a financial coach is probably a really good place to turn.
Totally. Yeah. A financial coach can help you to get where I want to be. And I swear we never do this. Like we don't often try to coordinate our beers with the topic of the show. We just think about the style of beer we want to enjoy. But literally the name of the beer we're drinking today is Where I Want to Be. This is by Deciduous Brewing Company. This is a hazy New England style IPA. Joel, what were your thoughts?
Man, robust hop goodness are the words I wrote down. It was a great middle of the road hazy IPA. Nothing over the top, but nothing underwhelming. It left me just feeling, you know, just happy, like Goldilocks style. The perfect temp, the perfect beer right here. I loved it.
That's right, man. It was just right. Not too hazy, but not too perfectly clear, like a West Coast style IPA. Nice and sweet with some of that hop sharpness going on. A fantastic brewery that we've never heard of before, Deciduous. We'll be sure to check out more beers from them. If you've had some other beers, maybe reach out to us. Let us know what other beers we should be checking out
by them. We just started getting their stuff here in Atlanta. Yeah. So I saw them on the shelf. I was like, okay, all right, worth a try for sure. And this one at least didn't disappoint.
That's right, yeah. So you can find show notes up on the website at howtomoney.com along with a picture of this beer. And we'll also make sure to link to Erica's book that we mentioned during this episode, as well as her sites. You can find all of that at howtomoney.com. Joel, that's going to be it for today, buddy.
Until next time, best friends out.
Best friends out.
Upswell Marketing would like to remind you that when customers choose your small business, they're really choosing you. So focus on super serving your existing customers and let Upswell handle the pipeline generation of new leads and customers.
Upswell specializes in developing customized direct response campaigns and is now offering a no-obligation free assessment of your current marketing strategies.
Not to mention, new customers also receive 15% off their first order when they mention that they heard about Upswell on this podcast. For more information, visit upswellmarketing.com. That's upswellmarketing.com.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Supercharge your work decks with AI-powered Canva presentations. All you do is start with a prompt. You describe your presentation in a few words, and Canva presentations will generate captivating slides that you can then customize in seconds.
Canva presentations are designed for every workplace and every department. Whether you work in sales, marketing, HR, ops, and more, Canva presentations can generate any deck you want for work. Sales decks, marketing presentations, onboarding plans, you name it. Any department can save time on any presentation with AI.
Generate slides in seconds with Canva presentations at canva.com. Designed for work.